It's Phil Parr coming into your homes, and it's good to have you with us. And this is the 8th of May is the day that we're recording this on, and our guest is Tim Ford. And, sir, you're doing well, aren't you?
Oh, thank you. Doing fine. Thank you for having me on the show.
And you're—I've forgotten where you're from.
Well, I live in cool California.
Not actually the city of Cool.
Well, it actually is a little town
called Cool.
It's in the Gold Rush country, and it was named after. It wasn't named for our political situations here in California. It was an old Gold Rush town. Named for a guy who was a minister who rode around to the mining camps on horseback and preached to the miners.
And the actual name of the town is Cool, California.
Yeah, it almost was named Cleveland. Cleveland was the president at the time, and one of the federal officials liked President Cleveland, and he submitted his naming paperwork, but the local postmaster had submitted his first. So I almost lived in Cleveland.
And so you're almost Cleveland, California. That doesn't sound right.
No.
Cool, California actually sounds like some town they would have in California. As California is such a cool place to be.
Well, that's what people think, but actually it's 150 years old and was named long before we ever thought of cool as anything but a weather item.
Yeah, nobody. The expression cool came in the 50s, I guess. That's cool. I guess we started saying that. Anyway, your level of vision now is virtually none.
Yeah, I'm totally blind. Have been since I was in an auto accident when I was 18. Prior to that, I was, a regular sighted person, just lost it all in one fell swoop.
In one fell swoop. Well, you and Dale Campbell, the same thing happened to that boy. They were riding down the freeway, and he could see one minute, and the next minute he couldn't. So were you driving the car that had the automobile accident?
Yeah, I was, and ran into a guy that, it was a night, and ran into a guy that didn't have any lights or reflectors in the back of his truck.
And boom, you hit him.
Yeah.
Totaled your car.
Oh, yeah.
Totaled you. Took out your vision.
Yeah.
Ah, that's sad. It's laughing about it, but that is so sad. 18-year-old boy, have that happen to your world you thought had come to an end. I can't see. What am I going to do, you know?
Well, I was blessed with a mom who never felt sorry for herself, even though she had every reason to do so. And so my reaction was, shall we say, not standard.
Uh-huh.
I just kind of said, oh, well, what do I do about this?
What do I do now?
Yeah, and yeah. I was lucky enough to hook up with some good folks right off the bat. A rehab counselor who was real cool.
Who was cool? Okay.
Yeah, my stepfather, when this guy came to the house, he was a totally largely blind guy,
uh-huh.
And he was driven up by his driver and came up in a sports car, and he had buckskin on with a headband, and this was back at the time when there were, quote, hippies in California.
Mm-hmm.
Stepfather said, who's that hippie? My mom thought he looked pretty cool, and so I started off with that, and so that gave me a good start to a positive outlook to it, and then I got my training right off the bat, and just a few months after it happened, was back in college in the same major and the same activities I've been in before. So
you were in college before you had the accident.
Yeah.
And studying what? You were obviously academic. What did you want to be?
Well, I was in business administration, and I kept on with the same major. There wasn't any real technical problems there, although this was back in the days before there was any real technology, 1971 by this time.
Didn't have any computers, so...
Yeah, so it was, just reading and writing and some research, and went through, got a business degree, and...
And you didn't know Braille, so you had to get someone to do your reading for you to...
Well, college textbooks weren't really much in Braille back in those days. I actually did learn Braille. I went to the Orientation Center for the Blind there in California. Place had been around since the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
And being a lazy sort, I heard about students who would tape their lectures and then listen to the tape and mm-hmm. take notes off of that. I said, boy, I don't want to go to class twice. So I learned the Slayton stylus and took all my college notes and even up through law school, all with a Slayton stylus, and that's what I primarily studied from. The books were on tape and took notes in Braille and had the class notes on the Slayton stylus, and that's what I did.
So you did have books on, we did have books on tape by then. I guess RFB&D was up when Roland.
Yeah, they started pretty much right after World War II, and so they were pretty rolling by then. In fact, I was part of the pilot test program for the four-track cassettes.
Really?
And I don't know for sure who may have invented it first, but in terms of anything that you actually saw out there, the first four-track cassette playbacks machine, you know, at the 15/16 and all that,
yeah,
were done by RFB.
So I guess prior to that, they were just sending you cassettes that you'd play one side and then play the other side, so...
No, reel-to-reel.
Oh, reel-to-reel tapes.
Yeah, no, I started with reel-to-reel tape, and a couple of years in, they mentioned that I heard somewhere that they were going to do this pilot program, and so for the next year, I got double sets because they didn't know if the tapes would hold up or the machines would. So,
so you got reel-to-reel tape and a cassette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great because, you know, you could operate the tape recorder on batteries, and I could take it to the beach and read at the beach.
Well, you could at least go outside. You know, you could at least you were a whole lot more portable than you were tied to that big reel-to-reel, whatever it was.
Well, for the first time, I was portable.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no way to run that old Sony 105.
Folks
remember that.
You had to be there with it. I mean, you had to stay where it was to read in order to.
Yeah, and it made for a great big doorstop, too, or an anchor. That was a big machine.
Yeah, boat anchor. That's what we used to call all that old equipment. I've still got a TIAC hooked up, a two-track TIAC, because occasionally you'll run across somebody's got a tape they won't dump to CD, you know? So I keep one going. So you made it through, you went through college, got a degree in business administration.
Yep.
And then you decided to go to law school. Was that on your agenda to begin before you went blind or not?
No, it wasn't. When I was a teenager, I would get comments from time to time from adults and sometimes my mom and others where I would be arguing about something. They'd say, you ought to be a lawyer. But it wasn't done in anything I would categorize as encouraging or positive. So I kind of just forgot the thing. And then my first job after college, I was running the vocational program at a place in California called the Living Skills Center for the Blind. And I did job placement and found work experience programs, and most of my students were on SSI, and that qualified them for this great federal program. And there's a reason I'm telling you this, because it's how I ended up at law school. The federal labor program at the time would actually cover the salary, so all I had to do was find a spot, and this would cover the salary, and so that allowed us to give people that all-important first real job.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, some federal directive came down and said that you no longer would qualify for this if you were receiving Social Security or SSI. Now, this didn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't.
Social Security I could think of, but SSI, knowing what it is, being, you know, a low-income thing, I started checking into it and had to find out what it was about federal materials and what a statute was and how statutes get turned into regulations and policy. And I noticed that the original law didn't say anything about SSI at all. It just said Social Security benefits. And so I ended up over at the federal office in San Francisco that oversaw that program for that part of the country and said, you know, I think there's a mistake here. And lo and behold, it was exactly what a lot of us have found out over the years who have dealt with Social Security and SSI, is people mix it up, and they think that SSI stands for Social Security. And, some bureaucrat lawyer somewhere back in Washington had not realized the two and combined them, and it was wrong. And it wasn't long after that that a new federal bulletin came out correcting the error. And I go, damn. Excuse my French. I'm sorry.
That's right.
But it was one of those things that, gosh, one person, by just reading up on something and pursuing it a little bit, could make a change that affected the whole country.
SSI is supplemental security income, right?
Yes. So that taught me the power of what law can do and what you can change if you just take the time. And I ended up then going to law school and been working with California state government ever since I graduated in 1981.
You were talking about when you were a child that you would argue with people and they would say, you ought to be a lawyer. People don't, until I married a lawyer, I had no idea what lawyers did, and they really do very little arguing.
It depends on your practice. I do some. I do some trials and administrative litigation where you're arguing before state boards and commissions, things like that. So I have and do some of that.
Yeah, you do some of that, but I think Luann goes maybe twice a week to court, but by and large, she's talking to people and trying to figure out what to file, what motions to file, what they should do with the problem that they have. She does a lot of domestic.
Yeah, and I do a lot of problem solving, and actually the business degree has come in very handy because when you're at, you know, kind of the higher levels of state government, you know, basically from the highest levels of state government, problem solving and doing something in a business-like manner is a very important perspective to have.
Sure it is.
And that's what I feel that I really like to do the most is help people solve their problems and do it in a legally defensible way.
But people also don't realize that most things lawyers are involved in are settled before they ever go to before a judge.
It can be that. I also handle and oversee all the civil rights and employment discrimination cases that are filed against my agency, which is the State Department of Health Services. And we're not afraid to go to trial and do. A fair amount of them are settled beforehand. We win quite a few of them before it ever gets to a jury. And then if it does go to a jury, we tend to win most all of those.
Yeah, but it, of course, with her domestic practice, most of those kinds of things are, you know, you decide, you make a decision on when he gets the kids and when she gets the kids and how much child support. And the state family code decides child support. The judge really has something to do with that, but he has a set of guidelines to go by. If the guy or the girl makes this much money, then they pay this much child support. So you pretty well know what the outcome is going to be before you get in there and get before a judge.
I suspect that's true. And actually, in law school, family law was my special area of concentration or study, for lack of a better term. And then after I did a few of the clinics and worked with real people, I realized that this was something that was just going to be too hard on me because people are always mad.
Oh, they are. And you learn to hate it. And she hates it. It's because it's always, it's, you know, people will fight over the stupidest. I mean, they want their way. They'll fight over a dining room set that didn't cost but $300 at Walmart, you know. I want it. No, I want it. Well, you know, and they fight over silly things, I guess. Of course, there's a lot of emotions involved at that point in time when you're getting a divorce. And so, anyway, that's what she does. But you actually go to court yourself. Because I guess you have assistance, you have people to help you to.
Yeah, I use an assistant. I've had one woman who I've been lucky to hang on to for 16, 17 years now, and
really,
and she knows me very well, and so she's there not only for having to review some print that somebody has just thrown out of the table, so to speak. But she's also there to help fill me in on whatever nonverbal communications might be critical and might not come across in someone's tone of voice or something. And that can help not only when you're in a hearing, but if you're in negotiations and things like that.
Sure. Ours is Westlaw. I don't know what you have when you do research. Do you have access to can you do your own research?
Oh, yeah. The way that I work now compared with when I started, vastly different. In fact, the things that used to be the hardest and most cumbersome, like research, legal research, writing, going through drafts, having to have somebody read a draft again, writing the first one in Braille, dictating it there, that's all gone by the wayside. And
oh, yeah.
So I get all my research online, do all my own reading and writing and with electronic documents and,
sure.
and scanner software. There's very little straight reading that my assistant does anymore.
That someone would have to do to you. Now, did you ever private, did you, you say you did some domestic, so you were in private practice for a while.
No, that was still in law school when I did the,
okay.
Those clinics. We were working with clients, you know, over the, with the supervision of the law professor. And I will do private things once in a while for
yeah.
Friends, family members. Things.
Are you like you're allowed to do that, and they don't your job doesn't mind them you doing that?
No, so long as you still get your yeah. state work done, and you're not getting involved in a case where a state agency is the other party.
As long well, as yeah, you can see how they wouldn't like that.
Yeah, as long as you stay away from that.
Yeah.
And I always get my work done, so it's not a problem.
Well, you you were at an early age, you manifested an interest in automobiles, and I want to talk about that. But let's take a little short break first, and then we'll come back, and we're going to talk about cars and working on cars. Kenneth Ford is our guest. I'm Phil Parbach with more Blind Like Me. Hang on.
My father would lift me high and dance with my mother and me. And then spin me around till I fell asleep. Then up the stairs he would carry me. And I knew for sure I was loved.
Are you on the Blind Like Me list?
And I have made a lot of new friends on the Blind Like Me list that I'll never forget.
Well, them crazy people on that Blind Like Me list just talk about the silliest thing.
To join the Blind Like Me list, send a blank email to blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Okay, I love being on the Blind Like Me list because I'm the moderator, and I get to delete people if I want to.
If you enjoy chatting with other blind folks, come join us on the Blind Like Me list. Send a blank email to blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. Trip to Walmart.
I wonder where the pharmacy is. It's somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my cane caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your cane is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping the big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at BlindMySmart.com?
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is blindmysmart.com. Again, that's www.blindmysmart.com.
Sometimes I'd listen outside the door, and I'd hear how my mother cried for him.
We're back with more Blind Like Me. Phil Parr, Kenneth Ford is our guest from you told me the name, but I can't think of what the name. The name is what? No, it's
Cool California.
How could I forget that? How could I forget Cool California?
And yeah. Cool California is actually up going into mountains above Sacramento because you go towards Lake Tahoe.
But you work in Sacramento.
I work in Sacramento.
You work for the state of California as an attorney.
Yeah, and I live out and kind of very much in the country and on a few acres. I get to work on a van pool that I've run for 20 years, and that's kind of where the car thing comes in. I started thinking with cars when I was a teenager,
mm-hmm.
and I was actually a cowboy, grew up on a cattle ranch.
You were actually working cattle ranch?
It was absolutely a working cattle ranch, and a lot of things we did were done exactly the same thing as they had been doing them for 150 years.
They raised cattle for slaughter.
Yeah, it was not a feedlot. It was, you know, open range, and so these were pastures of several thousand acres, and had about 10,000 head altogether, 10,000, 12,000.
Really?
So it was owned by a guy who was like my surrogate grandfather, a friend of my mom's, he and his wife. His wife was a nurse, and my mom is a nurse, and that's where they met. So my father had shell shock, battle fatigue from World War II, and so soon after I was born, he ended up going to the Veterans Mental Hospital for the rest of his life, and so I grew up just with my mom. So the ranch was that what she encouraged me to do, and that's kind of how I grew up, and I had a replacement grandfather that way, and the ranch hands all felt entitled to boss me around. So I had all sorts of dads and uncles to abuse me and learn, teach me to be tough.
Yeah, but sounds like a good childhood.
Oh, it was great. There were some times it was just incredibly hard work, but still was in some beautiful surroundings, and it was quite a thing. So working on all the ranch vehicles is where I got started. Just light stuff at first, and learn by breaking things.
Yeah, that's how everybody learns, by you tear things up, you take it apart.
Yeah, or I would fix it and break it, and then have to have somebody else fix it. So I learned from there, and then after I went blind, it was just I'd always enjoyed doing it. So I kept up when I got married when I was in college, and my wife drove, and so I worked on her car, and then later on, my second wife, we now have three, one for her, one for my vanpool, and one for my teenage daughter. So plenty of things to keep going, and it's been a good hobby. It's how I keep the vanpool going, because there's not a public transit bus for 15 miles from where I live to the nearest bus, and Sacramento will be another hour from there. So I take the van from my house, and it just goes door to door.
In other words, someone brings their car to your house and picks up your van, and you all pick up some other people?
Yep. Yeah, we have a route and go on down to Sacramento that way, and it's worked out like a charm. I basically haven't had to pay any cost for commuting for all these 20 years.
Yeah, so, but you have to own a car. I mean, you own the van.
Yeah, I own the van, so my contribution is owning the van and taking on all that entails and keeping it running, and if it has to go into the shop, I have to have a replacement vehicle, so there's responsibility to it. But it's a nice way of melding a kind of a hobby and a good thing to do when you're tired of doing legal stuff.
But then it allows a blind guy to live in the country, which you wouldn't be able to do if you didn't have this van pool. Your wife would have to drive you to work or something.
Yeah, and for the first few weeks, she actually drove me to where I was catching a ride in the nearest town. But that was a 45-minute round trip, and that quickly became not very convenient for her or for me. And I was in a situation where basically I could never be left alone for a day because I had no way to get anywhere.
Yeah.
So I started this, and now it's solved all those kind of problems.
Yeah, it's worked out. But you still worked on cars or actually tractors and all sorts of machinery when you were a kid, and you didn't stop doing that because you lost your eyesight.
No, and actually I do a lot. I've done a lot more and more involved kinds of things since, because mechanics in that regard is just what you learn. And over the years, you just learn more and more. So I do my own stuff. I'll help people work on theirs. And sometimes it's just a matter of dealing with friends or coworkers who drop into my office because they've heard I know something about cars, and they've got some repair job, and they want to know what to do so they don't pay any more than they have to.
Yeah, how much should this cost, or how big a deal is this?
Yeah, and I'll often have alternatives for them or things to check out first, because diagnostics is something that you really have to just think about. And a lot of mechanics these days, you know, they just don't think as hard about it. You know, they're in a hurry. They're trying to make their money, so they may do more than they need to, or they may do stuff that doesn't fix it. And they don't. Not all mechanics will take responsibility for that, so you can end up with paying a lot of money, and it doesn't get fixed, and then you still got to get it fixed.
And your car is still not doing performing as it ought to be.
Yeah.
Of course, back when you started working on cars, things were pretty simple. I mean, you the operation of a car was mostly physical. There were no computers in cars.
And with the computers, I haven't bothered because it's just very, very expensive to get all the computer diagnostic. There's still plenty to do on a car that hasn't really changed. I do all the brakes and shocks and cooling system and basic electrical. You know, I'll do alternators, I'll do relays, power window and door motors, and then you know the basic of things of changing filters and oil changes and things like that.
Yeah,
so there's plenty of things to do that actually can add up. I was telling my wife just the other day, for an example, I spent a day doing basic tune-ups on two vehicles and a brake job on one and all that, and the total cost of the parts was like $100, and at shop rates, the cost for labor and the parts would have been about $800.
So
saving $700 over a weekend, that made sense to her.
Made sense to her, and the drivetrain of a car is still the same. I mean, it still has universal joint and a drive shaft.
And change universal joints and drive shafts, things like that.
Yeah, and the rear end is still basically the same. I mean, it's the same principle, the same, it has nothing to do with computers.
Yeah, no, there's plenty that a person can do just in their driveway and laying underneath or up on ramps, things like that.
Yeah, and that's what you do. You have ramps. You don't have a lift or a pit or anything. You just put them up on ramps.
No, that's my dream house when I retire.
You're going to build a house with a pit or a lift?
Probably a pit.
That would be a lot easier, wouldn't it?
It's sure a lot cheaper, and I'm really cheap.
It would be a whole lot cheaper. We talked to one guy. It could have been you, because you've done the handyman show with us, that said when he got under a car, he put a plastic bag over his head. Was that you?
No, it wasn't me. You get underneath the car, put a helmet on your head sometimes. I wish I had, but I never do. Because it gets kind of tight underneath there sometimes, and you're moving around here, and all of a sudden, you're trying to get in a little different position, and next thing you know, you
banged yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said to keep anything from falling in his face or in his eyes, that he just slipped a little grocery bag over his head.
That'll work.
I don't see why it wouldn't. I thought it was a... Because I have gone down to the street or walked around outside, just wanted to go outside, wanted to take the garbage down or do something, just put a garbage bag over my head and, keep from getting away. I'm sure the neighbors think he's a nut. But I don't have to see. I can do it as well, with something, as long as it doesn't block my ears.
Yeah, no, you do what works, and there's always a way to do things, at least in most cases.
How involved has your car repair? I mean, have you torn an engine down? How involved have you gotten?
The most about is pulling heads. Rebuilding the heads in terms of actual engine stuff, that's about as deep as I've gotten. I've helped people do full engine overhauls, but I can't say that I, quote, did it. So top of the engine, and then, the fuel delivery system, pumps and intake manifolds, things like that.
So pretty far. I mean, you've delved pretty far into automobile, but you just do this for yourself now. You don't try to...
I don't do it for money. I will help people do theirs sometimes.
Yeah. And like you said, you've helped a guy tear an engine down, some guy that was going to do that. So you understand how the basic combustion engine works completely.
Yeah. Probably the most I did was actually on an old VW, which a friend of mine I had borrowed from another friend, and it just quit on us all of a sudden.
Really?
So towed it back to the house. Unfortunately, we'd been 50 miles away at the time, so that took a bit of doing. And I felt guilty. Didn't want anything. This was a college kid, and he had no money. So I went ahead and pulled the engine out. And in a Volkswagen, that's one of the easier vehicles to pull an engine out of.
How did you have a hoist? I mean, how did you get the engine out?
Well, actually, on a Volkswagen, the old bugs, as they called them.
With the engine in the front?
No, the bug had the engine in the back.
Okay.
But you actually dropped it down from underneath. So put the back up on jack stands and with a floor jack and balance things up there and twiddled the mounting bolts off, and then you back it off of the transmission and lower it down to the ground and slide it out.
And you've got the engine out.
Yeah, and then we pulled the heads off because the engine wouldn't turn over, and found inside there a little piece of the carburetor that had sucked out and jammed the engine from turning over.
Had actually seized, I mean, had actually gotten in a...
It was just a lump of brass. It was what they called a Venturi tube, which is the thing that sprays the gas out. Your engineer folks will know Venturi's a lot better than I do.
Yeah.
But it was just enough where it just kind of stayed in there, but it was soft, so we had this kind of pounded piece of brass, but it wasn't enough to hurt anything with the engine, so took it out, put the engine back together, got a new Venturi tube, and stuck it in the carburetor, and that was it.
But it had actually, this engine had sucked that down into the engine, and it was preventing the camshaft from turning, period.
It actually had pulled right in down through the valves and was mashed in between the piston and the top of the combustion chamber. So you could turn the engine back, you could turn it down, you could just tell that when it got to the top of some cylinder,
it stopped.
It wouldn't go past it.
That's
so we knew it was there somewhere, but it seemed to turn freely, and yeah, it was fine. And that guy took that car and ran it for several thousand more miles, and it was no problem.
Yeah, but while you had it apart, you didn't do anything. You didn't do any work on it, valve guides or anything.
Actually, did valve guides because it was a good time to do it. So did a head overhaul, so to speak.
Yeah, we think when you had it apart, it would be a great time. Why not? You know.
Oh yeah, yeah, and you know, of course, you have to have all the different seals to put it back together. So you know, that's as far as I got into it.
Well, that's pretty far.
Far enough.
Man, that's you know what I've never, of course, cars have never been my thing. I don't know much about them other than I tell you where I've learned a lot about cars from Click and Clack. Do you listen to them?
I do sometimes. I like them a lot.
They are funny, and I've learned a lot. I've learned more about automobiles from them than anybody else. Because they basically are asked the same questions every week when you get right down to it.
Yeah, but somehow it never comes out the same, does it?
It never comes out the same. You know, you're driving, some lady's driving down the road. When I make a left turn, I hear a funny noise. Well, when you hear a funny noise, that's, you know, if it's vibrating back up through your wheel, it's a rack and pinion. If, you know...
Yeah, and actually, one of the points they make, which is something that I can verify and kind of emphasize, is that people know their own cars.
Yeah.
And they know what it's wrong, and a good mechanic will really listen to that. But these days, especially if you're talking at dealerships, things like that, it's almost impossible for the owner of the car to actually talk with the mechanic.
It is.
Unless you make a big deal out of it, because they don't like you to talk to the mechanics there. They like to have their service advisors. So one thing that can help the owner a lot, and you know, a blind person knows their car can write this stuff down as well as anybody, to describe exactly what it's doing, when it does it, what the conditions are, and when it doesn't do it. And make sure that you type that up real clear and then tell the service advisor, be sure to give this to the mechanic. Sure to give this to the mechanics. And that can help a lot. I had a funny thing with an air conditioner, and I don't do air conditioner work because it's just requires very expensive equipment these days.
Well, you'd have to have a set of talking gauges of some kind.
Yeah, and you have to have vapor recovery, and these things are several thousand bucks. So it's not, I used to do it, the basic Freon charging on the ranch, but we just let that old Freon stuff off in the atmosphere.
But you can't. They don't like you to do that
anymore.
They
don't like to do that anymore. So I just wrote up what it was doing with as much detail as I could remember and took the car in. The mechanic read it, and when they reported back to me what it was, he says, you know, I read that, and I was 99% sure what it was before I even started. And so they were focused in on And he just tested that one component, and sure enough, that's what it was. And
yeah.
We were off and running. And
because you gave him good information, he was able to figure out.
Yeah, so I can't overemphasize how valuable it is to give symptoms, and good mechanics will listen to that. And sometimes you may have to push it with a shop. You know, the bigger the shop, the more the problem this is. But just tell them, hey, it's my money, and I don't want to spend any more than I have to, so please give this to the mechanic.
We bought in 2002 or 2003, I can't remember, a brand-new Tahoe, little Chevy Tahoe SUV. And it, every once in a while, from time to time, it didn't do it on a consistent basis, but every once in a while, driving around on Saturdays, two or three times, it would miss. You could feel it. Hup. You could feel the engine jerk.
Well, yeah. Things don't function as well on Saturday after Friday night.
I guess that's true. So we took it to the dealer, and he said, you bought some bad gas. Okay, maybe we did. But it continued doing it for about 3 months. So we finally took it back, and if we bought bad gas, that gas is long since gone from this car, and it's still doing it. Well, of course, they took it and kept it for a while, and they never could get it to do it. Finally, one Saturday morning, we went down there and sat until the car did it. They put the computer on it and figured out exactly what it was and fixed it.
And that is something with cars these days that, and this is the bad news of modern cars, is with all the electronics, yes, there are computers and there are diagnostic codes that the computer system will store, and they can tell a lot of things, but it doesn't work for everything. There are certain things that, unless it actually does it for the mechanics when they got all the stuff hooked up for it, they are still guessing as well. And you can end up with, you know, an intermittent electrical problem or performance thing is just one of those deals where you may be in for a long haul and paying some extra money until you find it.
Intermittent problems are always, and your daddy working on radios, intermittent problems are always the hardest to find because there aren't always there. But I wondered if you could, a guy could adapt, if you had the computer and the diagnostic equipment, I wonder if you could adapt JAWS to read the computer, to tell you what the computer had to say.
Yeah, it's going to have Tom Fowle and Bill Gary and those folks on there because they say that anything that sends out a digital signal, they can adapt somehow.
Well, they'd be the guys to call, would be the folks at Smith Kettlewell, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and I did some stuff with them years ago. They taught me how to solder.
Yeah, that's what you said. They taught you how to solder. And you, like you said, you don't solder on circuit boards, but you can. So if you want wires tied to a switch, you can sure do that.
Yeah, you know, do the basics there and have replace a few switches. And even though you'll see in automotive stuff a lot of these crimp connectors, when you talk to the folks who really are into things right, they'll say, don't use the crimp connectors. Solder those connections.
That's probably true, but then and also soldering in a car would be a whole lot different than soldering in a television. You know, working on a little circuit board. I've got some piece of equipment now that my engineer says, well, you know, Phil, I can't solder on this because it's got circuit boards. It's got circuits on both sides of the board. I mean, how does a blind guy handle that? You couldn't.
Yeah, well, Bill Gary seemed to find things out. He had a gizmo set up where he was doing microscopic soldering using a vibrating tactile array that he would stand up next to, and it was showing the image on his stomach. And he would guide things in and match them up and solder that way, believe it.
Now, who was this?
Bill Gary, who is in the same place at Smith Kettlewell that Fowle's worked at. So there's some amazing stuff, but no, I haven't done that. It's just more making sure the connections are good and permanent.
Well, all right, sure, we're going to let you get back. I guess out there it is, you're still early in the morning. It's not time for lunch, is it?
No, it's still mid-morning out here.
It's still mid-morning. Have another donut, another cup of coffee, that kind of thing. You say how long you've been working for the state?
Oh, 25 years now. And it's been good. It's been good. They take pretty good care of you, and if I ever want gadgets, they get them for me. I'm cheap, so I don't ask them for much, but whatever I've asked for, they get me.
Yeah, you've got talking computer and scanning equipment and that sort of thing, so you can do your work.
Oh, yeah, and it's pretty great stuff, and I can handle most things completely on my own now.
And you're
a lot of change.
You're on our blind handyman list.
Absolutely.
So if anybody has a question about an automobile or has a question they'd like to ask, they can write join that Blind Handyman list. We'd love to have them. It's a very informative list. We've got all people from all walks of life, people that know all sorts of things. You'd be hard pressed to ask a question on that list that some blind person couldn't answer, hasn't dealt with.
That's been my experience. It's quite miraculous when you got people from all over the world.
Yeah,
it's amazing what people have done, and somewhere in the world, some blind guy has done it. Whatever it is.
Yeah, you're not in this by yourself. It's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. You can be on the list. Jim Ford, thank you, sir, and we'll let you get back to work, and I'll let you know when this is going to air.
Thank you, Phil, and it's been a pleasure.
All right, talk to you.
Blind Science. Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Science, here's Tim Cummings.
Are you looking for broadcast equipment like microphones, telephone interfaces, CD players, anything for your broadcast studio at home, whether you're a professional broadcaster or an amateur just starting out? Well, you should take a look at www.bswonline.com. BSW stands for Broadcast Supply West, or Broadcast Supply Worldwide. One of the two, I'm not sure. They are a great company. They sell tons and tons of professional broadcast equipment, and the great thing about them is every year, a couple times a year, they run what they call an overstock sale, and they sell items that are either overstocked or items that are open box that people have sent back for some reason that they didn't like, or items that are refurbished. And so you can get some really great deals. I've bought some microphones at half price, and they're really an excellent company. Their site's very accessible. They ship very quickly. I buy most of my audio equipment from them. I can't say enough good things about them. I would give the website a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. And their website, again, is www.bswonline.com. For Blind Sights, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
We are visiting with B.C. Stockton from, we're north somewhere in North Carolina, aren't you?
No, Valdosta, Georgia.
What's the name again?
It's Valdosta, Georgia.
Valdosta, Georgia.
Yeah,
there's
on I-75 right before you get into Florida.
There's some song that mentions Valdosta, Georgia, but I cannot think what it is.
I can't either.
My head won't wrap around that. It's Monday morning. What the hell?
Here we go.
Anyway, your handle's no secret on For the People is Tech Tiger, so I think would say that you were very involved heavily with computers.
Yes.
That's your how you make your living, isn't it?
Yep, I've been doing it for about 17 years, and like I said, no day is the same. It just keeps on getting exciting.
And they're not going away, and they're here to stay, and they're the greatest thing since Louis Braille that happened to blind people.
Mm-hmm. And it's job security, too, because they're always going to mess up on you.
Oh, yeah, you're always going to have trouble, and you're always going to have people like me who don't know enough about them to fix them. It's you're always going to have that, but for the blind person who wants to do it, of course, a lot of older blind people don't, and I understand their apprehension about not doing it. But for it is just the greatest communicator. You know, we're talking about For the People. If you're in your house and you're lonely and you want someone to talk to, the computer is that close, and For the People is right there, and there's always somebody on.
And the range of people you meet. I talk to people in Australia, Japan. I mean, it is just fascinating.
Yeah, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, I got up early, about 4 o'clock, and there were two people in the chat room. I can't remember. Stick Boy was one of them, and this girl from Florida. I can't remember her handle. But he was in Canada, she's in Florida, and I'm in Lufkin, Texas, and we're chatting like we're sitting in the same room.
It's
just amazing. Mm-hmm. Little plug for the people. Maybe Jennifer will give me a discount on my membership or something.
Hey, there we go.
Anyway, tell us about yourself, sir. You were your childhood. Where were you born and raised, and about when you were younger?
I was born in Del Rio, Texas. I'm an Air Force brat, so that's where my dad was stationed at the time. And
Delia, Texas, down in the valley.
Del Rio, yeah.
Oh, Del Rio.
Mm-hmm.
Hot, hot, hot.
Well, I was just a baby, and we moved about, 2 years later up to San Antonio, so I just kind of rolled with everybody.
Yeah.
And, we just moved through Air Force bases over the years, and then his last station was up in Chicago. So when I graduated high school there, I went to Florida, got a job as a landscape engineer. That's a fancy term for gardener.
Yeah.
And I started working in landscaping in Orlando, Florida.
Now, you were sighted as a child.
Yeah, 20/20 vision. In the first grade, I noticed I couldn't read the information on the chalkboard. So that's when I got my first pair of glasses. And like I said, I went down to Orlando in 74 to do landscaping.
Uh-huh.
And in 76, that's when my retinitis pigmentosa was really kicking.
Yeah.
And my lawns were looking really ugly. So the boss kind of recommended that I find another vocation.
Yeah, probably so. That probably wasn't real good for you.
Yeah.
And so your eyes were beginning to dim. You were beginning to lose your vision at that time?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And what age were you, mid-20s? Early?
Let me see. Yeah, 76. Yeah, I was about that's 20 years old. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in my 20s. From 20 to 25, it really went down.
Your vision began to really deteriorate.
Yep.
But up until then, you didn't think too much about being a blind guy. That never wasn't in your plans.
Well, it hit me when I was 16. It kind of hit me with the first phase of retinitis pigmentosa. You know, the night blindness. So
yeah.
I couldn't really see well at night. That's when I went and got the eye exam, and they told me I had RP. So, but I still had 20/20 vision. So you know. So
what
I couldn't go out at night, you know.
What the heck? So you can't go out at night. So
mm-hmm.
what? So you can still see everything you need to see.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we tend to, in our 20s, we would not take much of anything too seriously.
That's it, yeah.
Other than drinking and smoking and chasing women.
Hey, there we go.
That's about it. So you gradually, over a period of time, you married then? Did you decide to raise a family, or what was your, single guy?
In 76, when I gave up the landscape job, I came up to Adel, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
Which is just about 20 miles north of Valdosta,
uh-huh.
And I had some family up there, so I got in with Volk Rehab, and they evaluated me and said, you're smart enough to go to college. I go, well, shoot, I'll give it a try. So
why not?
I started going to Valdosta State here in Valdosta, and in, I started there in 77, got my bachelor's degree in 81, went out and tried to find work, but, it was rough back in the 80s. They didn't like hiring blind people too much. So.
Yeah, by that time you were legally blind or
yes.
totally
mm-hmm.
blind, or what was the condition?
Yeah, it was like light perception.
Yeah, so you were a blind person by then, and you went
yes.
to college. How did you do your reading in college? Because they hadn't taught you Braille or anything.
Well, my vision diminished, and I had a closed circuit TV for a while, and then after my bachelor's,
mm-hmm.
I got married in 1981. To my wife, Tina.
And you were already blind then?
Yeah, and then during my master's degree, she did all the reading for me.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Wives are good for that. Handy?
Oh, man, I tell you.
Those little handy-sided wives will just read that stuff to you.
I kept telling the professors that I'd give her a degree, too.
And so you got a degree in what was your degree in? Computer?
Psychology,
Psychology?
Yeah, that helps when you're dealing with computers.
Oh, I don't know. Psychology. Well, that's. But you never were able to. Were you able to find ever able to find work in that field?
Oh yeah. In 83, I graduated with my master's degree,
uh-huh.
and took about another year or so. But in July of 84, I got my job as a Volk Rehab counselor for the blind in Jacksonville, Florida,
uh-huh.
with Division of Blind Services.
Now, that would be sort of use of a degree in psychology,
yep.
in that you were evaluating potential clients for rehab or what?
Exactly, yep. Mm-hmm.
So that would be kind of using your psychology degree.
Yeah. I had a caseload of about 200 people. There's a lot of blind people in Jacksonville, Florida.
Now, why would one give up a state job like that for anything?
Well, when I was working for Division of Blind Services, they sent me to a training program in Starkville, Mississippi, and it was on computer technology for the blind.
Uh-huh.
And after about a week and a half, 2.5 weeks, yeah, I got back and I started getting blind people jobs in the computer field. And I really, really caught the bug. So a position came up at Starkville, Mississippi, and I said, hey, Tina, what do you think? She goes, hey, let's go for it. So I got the technology job at Mississippi State University. That's how I got into technology.
Now, that's where did I interviewed a fella that has that, that's doing that job now.
Franklin Johnson.
Is that who it is?
I think that's his name, yeah.
Maybe I didn't interview him, but I interviewed, I'll never think of this fellow's name. He helped me out. He's on the Bookport list, and he helped me out with the problem of getting the card out of Bookport to read in something else. And I'll never think of his name. Anyway,
well, you took... What I call before B.C., it was Jay Stiley.
And you...
After B.C., it was Franklin Johnson, yeah.
You after BC, I love it. And so you took that job in Mississippi, moved to Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I worked there about 6 years, and got really good at it. And the Department of Veteran Affairs, started looking at me.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were starting a new computer training for blind veterans in Birmingham, and so they called me, uh-huh. And I applied for the supervisor job. So in November of '93. Tina and I moved to Birmingham, Alabama, and started the computer training program for blinded veterans.
You've lived all over, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Tina said when I first met her, she goes, I'm never leaving Valdosta, Georgia, and I'm taking that girl all over the world.
You really have, haven't you? So Birmingham, Alabama,
mm-hmm.
Which seems like would be a pretty nice place to live.
It's not bad, yeah. It's a good city.
Talked to a fellow named Yellow Hammer yesterday who's from just north of Birmingham.
You betcha, yeah, he's a good man.
He is a good man. Mm-hmm. Seemed like a good man. He works at a school, teaches multi-handicapped children Braille and,
mm-hmm.
and computers and things.
Yeah.
And so you, Birmingham, how long did we stay there?
From 93 to 2002. In November of 2001, Tina's daddy had a bad stroke. So we said, I think it's time to come home. So
yeah. In
February of 2002, we packed up everything and came to Valdosta, Georgia, and that's when I started my company, TechnoTiger.com.
And so you're an independent operator now.
Yes.
TechnoTiger.com.
Yep. TechnoTiger.com.
TechnoTiger.com, all one word, TechnoTiger,
yes.
All one word. What does your company do? I mean, what do you, when you go to that website, what do you find and what do you do?
Well, it's just a breakdown of my job experiences, and I train blind people to use computers. Right now I'm working with a blind veteran here in Valdosta. I work with the Department of Rehab with Georgia. I work with the Valdosta City School System, so I'm kind of a freelancer.
That's what I was going to say, but you do get references sometimes from government agencies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I work with the feds, the state, and local agencies.
Do you have to be a government vendor to do that?
Well, you just got to get on their vendor list, you know.
Yeah.
You know, send in your information, tax ID number, and all that, and then, and just, and just take it from there.
And you get some calls, I guess. And, of course, one customer sometimes leads to another.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But you are totally independent. You're not controlled by, if you want to take Thursday and Friday off, that's fine.
That's it. Sometimes I work with people Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Sometimes I work Tuesday, Thursday. You know, sometimes it's all week. So it just depends on the caseload.
Well, it sounds like you're happy doing that, and
I
guess
love it.
I guess one can make a living doing that without having to work for anybody. I never was good at working for people either. I couldn't. Anyway, sounds like you're doing fine. But the way I calculate things, are you 50 or are you about to be 50?
I'm 49 and still fine.
You're going to be 50 this year, though.
I should get my AARP card July 24th of this year.
July 24th of this year. Well, I've already got mine. And use it quite often.
Uh-huh.
It actually helps sometimes when you're traveling. And you and your wife do a good bit of travel.
Oh, yeah, we love to travel. Mm-hmm.
You just got back from somewhere down in Florida, didn't you?
Yep, Bernardino Beach. It's a nice little small town on the coast there. Had some good beach time.
And so you spent some beach time down there, and I think you said you're going on a cruise pretty soon, going to...
Yeah, they got a new cruise service out of Jacksonville, Florida, Carnival, and it's a celebration, yep.
Well, Carnival is not new, but I guess they haven't been launching, or they haven't.
That's
been...
That's right, they just started in Jacksonville not too long ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I went on a cruise out of Miami one time, flew to Miami from Houston, and it took a 7-day cruise, I think, there.
Mm-hmm.
We're going, we've booked an Alaska cruise. Have you all done, have you done that yet?
No, I haven't. You know, my aunt and uncle did. They loved it. I think you're going to have a good time.
I think we probably will, and we're going at a great time. We're going in early September,
mm-hmm.
and so should be, I mean, it shouldn't be, maybe it won't be too cold. I'm not into cold weather at all. Maybe it won't be too cold, but I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun because cruises are great for blind people if you don't have any vision, because everything is the same. I mean,
exactly.
The halls are straight.
Mm-hmm.
The everything is going to be in the same place all the time.
Exactly.
If you decide that you don't want to go to the dining room for breakfast, you simply order breakfast in your room, and they
mm-hmm.
have no problem bringing it. They don't care. They're, you know, if you want coffee at 6:30 in the morning, put it on the sign on your door, hang it on the door, and
mm-hmm.
I guarantee you within 5 minutes of 6:30, somebody's going to knock on your door with a pot of coffee.
That's a little bit of heaven, isn't it?
It is wonderful. I mean, it is just blind person's heaven. I think more and more blind people are going on cruises. I read something the other day about blind people discovering cruises. They're wondering, what is your level of vision now? Is zero, right?
Well, no, I still light perception. You know, I got enough to kind of, like I said, I'm looking at the window right now. I can tell, you know, the rectangle of light. That's about it. Yeah.
So you know there's light out there, but
yeah.
That's about it.
But that's about it. There's no detail.
All right. What's the address again? Maybe somebody want to go there and look around and see what you do.
It's all the W's and technotiger.com. TechnoTiger.com.
TechnoTiger.com. All right, sir. We're going to go, and I'll see you on For the People. Maybe not. If you get in there at 11 o'clock tonight, you probably won't see me, but maybe. Were they playing music last night and they play it again, Sam?
Yeah, they were. Some good tunes.
I bet they were. Was Soft Southern there?
No, we had a little bit. Who is it? Had a couple other people in there, yeah.
I'm slowly getting to know names. The other night I said, some girl was signing off, and I said, well, it was really nice to meet you. And she pointed out, well, you met me before 3 or 4 times. You
yeah.
just, you know.
So it takes a while to catch on all the names.
It does. It takes a while because you don't hear their voices long enough to associate the voice with the name.
Exactly.
We're talking about For the People. That's where we met, is on the For the People side. It's just For the People. Is it .org?
It's all the W's.
Yeah.
F-O-R.
Yeah.
-PHE-people.com.
.com.
And you know, we let sighted people on there. You know, sighted people know how to use computers.
It is free, and you submit an application. Gary will approve it and send it back to you within a couple, 3 days. It is absolutely free. There are lots of chat rooms, lots of opportunities to make new friends and visit with people and talk
mm-hmm.
to